Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Bailey reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, February 17th. Library Director, we have our own responsibility. Garza about questionable book concerns. We have to be the voice for the vulnerable members of this community. By Ben Schaefer. Debbie Garza, Director of Midland County Public Libraries, said it's the county government's responsibility to be good stewards of county resources, but it's the library's job to provide access to reliable information on a wide range of topics for all members of the local community. Garza was at the Midland County Commissioner's Court on February 13th. She shared a document regarding donations made to the public library. Commissioner Diane Anderson asked Garza about titles based on content, specifically critical race theory and gender identity, that Midland County would not allow in their libraries. Anderson said she would provide the library with a list of 853 books that contained such subjects. According to Garza, when a book is donated, public library staff considers similar criteria to when a book is purchased. That criteria includes literary value, awards, physical condition, and more. They are often separated in terms of genre and target audience. Given their duty as a public library, they don't censor content and wouldn't deny a donated book based on subject matter. It's the library's responsibility to provide resources that show the full picture on a wide range of topics, according to Garza. The reader may decide their stance on the topics for themselves. Does it have a literary value? Is it relevant? Is it something that the community might be interested in? We obviously can't read every book, so we're going to rely on the needs of the community, Garza said. Garza, who's been an administrator at the library since 2019, said the county government has inquired about specific individual titles on the list of donations in the past, but never the list in its entirety. There is no way for Garza to know if patrons check out books containing subjects like critical race theory and gender identity frequently. People are interested in what's current, Garza said. So if they see something on the news or the Today Show, or if their favorite actor is reading a certain book, we get a lot of questions about that, and a lot of requests for things they, the patrons, may see. Specifically, in the nonfiction classification, the title Patrons' Desires can be based on changing trends and hotly discussed topics, according to Garza. Garza said the county has been a great supporter of the library, both financially and otherwise, and she understands that county commissioners need to answer to their constituents and be mindful to where the county's money is going. But at the same time, that's what we do as public library, Garza remarked. We have to be the voice of the vulnerable members of this community, and we serve everyone in this community, just like the county government does. We're providing a service, public access, access to information and to services. We're providing a place for people to come. So they, the county officials, do have some oversight in that. But at the same time, we have our own responsibility to the community to provide real resources with accurate information. Hogan Park golf pro Greg Sykes readies for retirement by Stuart Doreen. It's time for Hogan Park head golf professional Greg Sykes to return home. After nearly 33 years at Hogan, 31.5 as head professional, Sykes is retiring and building a house in northwest Louisiana near Shreveport, home of pine trees and bass fishing lakes. Sykes, 58, talked about when he first came to Midland. I had never been west of Fort Worth. Like many people who moved to Midland in the late 1980s and 1990s, he came for a job, a position in the Hogan Park Pro Shop. Was there a culture shock? It was never as great as his parents thought. They said I wouldn't be out there for 3 years, Sykes said, that there was no trees and water. He made it past that estimate, appreciating the golf business, the tournaments Hogan Park hosted, being able to see a long way, and working for Parks and Recreation Services, like Monet Burke, Tina Waz, and Christina Burns. I have been lucky to work for them as long as I have, Sykes said. Sykes' time at Hogan will go down as time of expansion. Hogan Park went from 27 to 36 holes, an unparalleled growth. Last fiscal year, there were 65,400 rounds played. This is around 4,000 more than 2021 and nearly 16% more than 2019, a pre-COVID year that was one of the busiest for the course and pro shops that Sykes could remember. Sykes said through 4 months of FY 2023, Hogan is ahead of the pace set last year. Golf went through a boom across the country after the pandemics, Sykes said. People needed to be outside. Outdoors is where Sykes prefers to be. When not giving a lesson, running a tournament, or taking care of Hogan Park business, he is likely to be found on a lake somewhere in West Texas. He said Amistad near Del Rio and Champion near Colorado City are favorites. He said the home he and his wife are building, 20 minutes south of Shreveport, is within an hour and 15 minutes of Seven Lakes. Hogan Park currently is advertising for the head golf pro position. Sykes said city leaders have made investments over the previous 5 or 6 years to improve the golfing experience. They include improvements to the Roadrunner course, driving range improvements, and cart paths all the way around Quail Course. The city of Midland has been great, Sykes said. I couldn't have asked for a better place to work. House Committee sees how energy communities matter. House Energy and Commerce Committee continued its travel to Midland by Mella McEwen. Members of the House Energy and Commerce Committee continue their travel to Midland to see firsthand how the region's oil and gas industry affects local economics and what impact expanding energy production or lack of expansion would have on local economies. Our primary energy objective is to ensure reliable, secure, and affordable delivery of energy to Americans, to their homes, to their businesses, the grocery store, and everywhere in between, Committee Chairman Kathy Rogers, Washington, said in her opening statement. We must build upon our nation's diverse and abundant natural resources to create more supplies, more dependable power. We must work to develop a predictable regulatory landscape, one that unleashes Americans' unmatched genius for innovation and technological leadership. Energy communities matter, she continued, and the committee moved from its hearing room in Washington, D.C., to the nation's energy capital, Midland, to see where the nation's energy future begins, in places like the Permian Basin. She was joined by other committee members in the Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center at the Subcommittee on Energy, Climate, and Grid Security heard from Midland Mayor Lori Blong, Adrian Carrasco, Chairman of the Midland Hospice Chamber of Commerce and President of Premier Energy Services, Michael Zavada, Professor of Biology and Geosciences at the University of Texas of the Permian Basin, and Steve Pruitt, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Election Resources and Chairman of the Board of the Independent Petroleum Association of America. Blong told committee members, the city of Midland has seen firsthand how the shale revolution positively impacted jobs, created greater sustainability in a historically cyclical business, and is helping achieve energy security. She also cited the tremendous benefits derived from the record taxes the industry has paid locally and statewide, supporting education, health care, first responders, and infrastructure like roads, bridges, and broadband. She described what she called the headwinds of pipeline and infrastructure permitting the ESG, Environment, Social, and Governance, movement driven by the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the current administration's vow to put an end to fossil fuel. The messages, virtue signaling, and rhetoric that have come from the federal level lately tell us oil and gas is evil are not on the side of the average American or on the side of care for our environment. This could not be further from the truth, she testified, citing efforts to develop beneficial reuse of produced water and emission reduction. In his work of Premier Energy Services, Carrasco told committee members he sees firsthand how the industry strives to operate responsibly. He said he has also seen how the industry has allowed entrepreneurs to fulfill their dreams of opening restaurants or bakeries, restaurants expand into second locations, and catering services to oil sites. Asked by Republican August Pfluger, the San Angelo Republican who represents Midland-Odessa and other parts of the Permian, how the rhetoric around the industry has affected his 64 employees, Carrasco replied, "It wreaks havoc. They see how the industry benefits them and the community. The innovations being made. It creates panic. They wonder what's going to happen to them." Lori Blong Pruitt described the headwinds facing the industry, citing regulatory uncertainty that has constrained capital formation and investment. He stressed the need for permitting reform that speed up permits for infrastructure like pipelines and transmission lines. He warned that if the administration and the industry remain on their current path, the U.S. developing countries and U.S. allies will be confronted with $150 oil prices. "It's not what we want, but unless those barriers are removed, we won't be able to grow oil and gas production to meet demand," he said. For his part, Zavada urged support for local communities who are more susceptible to the boom and bust cycle of the industry to improve their communities and attract other energy or tangible industries to diversify their economies. And while the Permian Basin will remain the supplier of a major portion of U.S. energy for at least the next 50 years, it is no secret West Texas is also an ideal environment for the production of alternative energy, solar, wind, and hydrogen fuels. "I believe if rational and cooperative investments in the development of all forms of alternative energy will not only diversify our energy portfolio, but continue the long tradition of West Texas as the major source of America's energy needs." Eccentric Brewing Company is changing Midland's live music scene, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. The difference between going to a venue and listening to music versus going to a venue to listen to music lies within the preposition, and many spots around town tend to forget about the latter. Yes, live music nights highlight local talent, but a true listening room experience, well, Midlanders don't get that very often. Eccentric Brewing Company is rewriting the narrative. Generating worthwhile city-oriented entertainment consistently comes easy to brewery company Jamie Ill and Aaron Patchhofer, and their latest creation, Singer-Songwriter Night, plays no exception. Laid in the foundation of West Texas Pride, the currently monthly event giving artists a chance to not only practice performing in front of a live audience, but also to put themselves in position to soar beyond Midland city limits. Furthermore, the unique one-on-one, big city replicating attentive experience gives attendees a chance to actively hone in on the lyrics in a quiet, music-focused setup. These people are going to go places. They're going to be names in years from now that we look back and say, "I remember when Garrett Bryan used to play those dive bars in Midland," Elle said. "It's the real, honest, genuine experience of music and the people that make it special." After the kickoff on January 21st, Elle said that he saw the shift in spectators, how they serenely focused on the mesmerizing tunes instead of partaking in casual bar time chatter. During act breaks, initiatives such as the feature spotlight, where a music professional explains their process, how they got started, etc., furthered the educational aspects and opportunities presented by the team. True proponents of the small town creators, L and Patchhofer, re-implemented originality back into the live music scene by reopening the show door for our musicians in a one-of-a-kind way. For those looking to get involved, signups for Friday's open mic starts at 6 p.m., arrive early, set spots and viewing seats fill within 15 minutes. Lumbee Rivers, one of Eccentric's first ever performers, will host the event, celebrating his birthday at the post-event after-party held at Eccentric Brewery. Taquero and Mucho mobile food truck bring the bites and there's no cover charge. Crime Stoppers, authorities still investigating pedestrian fatality, by Mercedes Cordero. Midland Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward for any information on a February 7th hit-and-run pedestrian fatality. On February 7th, Midland Police Department's Traffic Division responded at about 7:25 p.m. to an accident on the North Service Road near the 1900 block of East Interstate Highway 20, Mile Marker 137. Officers found Lazaro Resendez Villafuerte, 51, from Cedar Creek, lying in the roadway with life-threatening injuries. The injuries are consistent with being struck by an unknown vehicle that fled the scene, according to a Midland Crime Stoppers Facebook post. Villafuerte was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he was pronounced deceased at 7:47 p.m., according to a previous Midland Reporter Telegram report. Investigating officers believe that Villafuerte exited a truck to retrieve a block of wood and was struck by a vehicle. Two witnesses driving down the 1800 to 1900 block of East Interstate 20 North Service Road observed a pickup parked on the shoulder of the North Service Road. The pickup had its headlights and hazard lights on and was idling. The witness observed a male subject lying in the roadway and immediately called 911, according to the Midland Crime Stoppers. According to the Midland Crime Stoppers, that portion of Interstate 20 is remote with no street lights. The night of the accident, officials report it was very dark due to being overcast and cloudy that evening. Authorities do not have any witness to the crash or video, and no one has come forth with any additional information on this case. If a person has information about the case, call the hotline or go to 694tips.com or use the mobile app P3Tips. A person could earn a $1,000 cash reward if the tip leads to an arrest. No caller ID is used, and callers will remain anonymous. Reference MPD case number 23020-7041.
AAA, Gas Prices Fluctuating in West Texas, by Ben Schaefer. West Texas gas prices fluctuated this week, ranging from an increase of 22 cents in El Paso and a 7-cent increase in Abilene to a 3-cent decrease in Midland, according to AAA Texas. Still, the organization reported that Midland remained home to the second highest prices statewide at $3.15, which is 13 cents higher than the state average at $3.02, and 6 cents greater than the average in Odessa, $3.09. Across the region, AAA Texas reported the following prices: $2.97 in San Angelo, a decrease of 2 cents, $2.99 in Lubbock, an increase of 2 cents, $3.02 in Amarillo, $3.02 in Abilene, and $3.40 in El Paso. El Paso, Midland, Texarkana at $3.11, Odessa, and College Station Bryan at $3.06 made up the five highest gas price averages of the 27 largest Texas metro areas AAA Texas surveys, according to the weekly report. The lowest price in the state could be found in the Red River metropolitan area of Sherman-Denison, $2.93. San Angelo tied with Waco and San Antonio for the second lowest average. Texas has the lowest gas price average nationwide at $3.02. The national average is $3.42. Volatility in the crude oil market has resulted in price fluctuations around the state, with some areas lower than last week, while others are higher, AAA Texas reported Thursday. Oil and gasoline markets remain conflicted between balancing supply and demand forces in the face of a possible slowdown over economic concerns domestically, while optimism for increased international consumption is on the mind of the analysts. 1 year ago, Midland's average price for gas was $3.33, and Odessa was $3.27. The state average was $3.21. Andrews ISD board calls for a $157 million bond election. By Midland Reporter Telegram. Andrews. During its regular meeting this week, the Andrews ISD Board of Trustees unanimously called for a $157 million bond election to be held on May 6. Community voters will have an opportunity to vote on the bond proposal during the May election. The bond would be nearly as much as the bond Midland ISD passed in 2012, $163 million. Projects included in the bond. Proposition A, $109 million. High school main building remodel, high school science wing, high school administration wing, high school choir and band halls, high school CTE building for industrial arts, cosmetology, and barber spaces, additional performance center locker rooms, revised parking, revised campus entry, fencing demolition. Proposition B, $36 million. Athletic upgrades. Proposition C, $12 million. Mustang Bowl renovations. Informational items including videos, presentations, and handouts will be presented to the Andrews community over the coming weeks to provide an informative outlook on the contents of the bond proposal. Visit the bond website for more information, www.andrews.esc18.net/bond2023. New Texas bill could legalize craft brewery home delivery. By Robin Bradshaw. Last week, new laws were filed for consideration to the 88th legislative session in Austin that will propose to legalize direct consumer shipping and delivery from Texas breweries and brew pubs. Introduced as Senate Bill 752 and House Bill 2003, if the bills are passed, the consumer would still need to show valid proof of age and sign a receipt. Dubbed the Beer to You bills, is a follow-up to the 2019 Beer to Go campaign during the pandemic to help in economic relief and public safety efforts. The new bill seeks to level the playing field with Texas wineries, grocery stores, liquor stores, and restaurants, reports Craft Brewing Business. When Texas legislation passed laws allowing wineries to ship directly to consumers in 2005, it revolutionized the industry in Texas, according to the report. Texas is the fifth largest state for wine production in the country and an industry with more than $20 billion in total economic impact. Advocates for local craft breweries and the new proposed bill testify it's a win-win for the state and supporting small business bottom lines. This is a good thing all around, said Brandon Harper with Neusis Brewing Company. In our opinion, regulations regarding the transportation of beer should be heavily scrutinized to determine their purpose. The three-tier system had its place in the 1920s. However, as society evolves, so should its regulations. This is how I see it, Harper explains. We're good at making laws. Unfortunately, we have no efficient system to remove or modify them. I think regulations by nature predetermine winners and losers. Sometimes they're necessary, but more often products of special interest lobbyists. We're excited to see any regulations potentially lifted from our industry, he adds. Craft brewing is a tough business, and we expect all brewers to support this bill, specifically because it will benefit consumers and brewers. Texas mall shooting started as fight between groups. Associated Press. El Paso. A Texas shooting at an El Paso mall that left one person dead and three others wounded began as a confrontation between two groups, police said Thursday. The people involved in the fight Wednesday at Cielo Vista Mall ranged in age from late teens to their early 20s, Interim Police Chief Peter Pasillas said. This is a random incident that occurred between two groups at the mall, he said. The shooting added to the dozens of people already killed this year in mass shootings across the United States. El Paso police said hours after the gunfire that two people had been taken into custody. The shooting broke out in a busy shopping area and across a large parking lot from a Walmart where 23 people were killed in a racist attack targeting Hispanic people in 2019. El Paso, with a large Latino population of about 700,000 people, sits on the U.S. border with Mexico, where residents of both countries cross frequently. The United States has seen dozens of people killed in mass shootings so far in 2023. Most recently, Monday at Michigan State University, where three students were killed and five more were wounded. In January, 11 people were killed in the Los Angeles area city of Monterey Park as they welcomed the Lunar New Year at a dance hall popular with older Asian Americans. Pasillas said the two people taken into custody after Wednesday's shooting, as well as all of the victims, were males. The FBI, which is assisting El Paso police in the investigation, set up a website where the public can share photos or video from the shooting. Republican Governor Greg Abbott said in a tweet Wednesday night that he had spoken to the mayor of El Paso and offered assistance from the Texas Department of Public and Safety and the Texas Division of Emergency Management. In 2022, more than 600 mass shootings broke out in the U.S. in which at least four people were killed or wounded, according to the Gun Violence Archive.
Sports. MISD Teams Ready for Tall City Invite by Oscar Leroy. The Midland High and Legacy Boys Golf Team are hoping for good weather and some good scores this weekend for the Tall City Invitational. The yearly tournament will take place at Ranchland Hills Golf Club on Friday and then at Hogan Park's Roadrunner course on Saturday. MHS coach and tournament organizer Brian Sledge said because of the expected cold temperatures in the mornings, they are planning to tee off at 9:30 a.m. both days, but he said the start can be pushed back later depending on the weather. Sledge said they are expecting no golfers, and other than Wolf Forth Friendship, the rest of the District 2-6A teams will be participating. Sledge added that they are also expecting about five El Paso schools to be in the field. Hopefully the weather will cooperate, Sledge said. We have a real good turnout as far as the teams are going to be there. Sledge said he's been very happy with the way his team has been progressing, especially with three freshmen in the top five. They are young, but overall they have been doing well, he said. They are learning as freshmen, and we're doing a lot better than most people give us credit for. Brody Mann is the only senior on the squad, while junior Trenton Kletcherside also brings experience. The three freshman Bulldogs on the squad are Gilbert Lujan, who's playing in the number one spot, Carter Tipton, and Logan Maldonado. Sledge added that there is also young talent coming up in the program's pipeline and is excited about the future of the program. LHS is playing in its first tournament of the spring semester, and Coach Wes Overton hopes his team can shake off some of that rust this weekend. Overton said the last tournament the Rebels played was in the district preview tournament in San Angelo in November. The team won that event in 30-degree weather. The Rebels are the defending district champions and returned three players from that team in junior Kellen Young and Drew Ironside, along with senior Spencer Widener. Having that much experience, nothing can replace that, Overton said. Now they are a little more settled in, and they have pulled off some of those experiences. Now they're back and want some more. The three varsity veterans are joined by junior Ethan Luttrell and sophomore Zavian Alvarado. At this point with these guys, and I know every other team wants the same thing, but we're looking for consistency this weekend, Overton said. These guys are capable of shooting low scores. We just want to be consistent with the low scores and stay away from the bigger scores. Midland High sends three first-timers to UIL State Meet by Christopher Hadorn. Three Midland High athletes will experience the thrill of the UIL Class 6A Swimming and Diving State Meet for the first time on Friday and Saturday at Lee and Joe Jamal Texas Swimming Center in Austin. The Aqua Dogs are sending a trio of first-time qualifiers to state with freshman Hannon Kruger in the girls' 100-yard freestyle and 100 backstroke, junior Jake Shelton in the boys' 100 freestyle, and junior Elise Abbott in the girls' 1-meter diving event. Although the three are new to Grand Stage, that is the UIL State Meet, Midland ISD head swim and dive coach Steve Flato said one of his program's main topic is telling the kids not to be satisfied to make it to state. Flato wants his swimmers and divers to have a hungry attitude at this level of competition where the top three are awarded medals on the podium. Abbott earned her state spot meet by winning the Region 1-6A championship in the 1 meter with a score of 417.50 points on February 6th at COM Aquatics. Abbott enters the state's meet at the 9th seed among the field of 24 divers. Abbott, who is accustomed to competing in big-time meets on a 3-meter in platform, says she is going to stick to her usual routine, which is performing her dive and then putting on her headset with music to drown out the sound and ignore what her competitors are doing. "I'm pretty excited," Abbott said of her first state meet. "I just try and calm myself down before. When you go in there and get too excited, then you get too nervous. I just see it as another meet. I'm just doing the same thing that I do all the time. Try not to get super excited about it." Abbott's routine has obviously worked, as she has been courted by numerous Division I dive programs, including Alabama, SMU, East Carolina, and Florida International. Abbott says she will probably stick to the same dive routine that has gotten her here, but she's considering using a reverse twister because it will give her a higher score if she could finish it off with a perfect entry. "She looks more confident this year than I have ever seen her," Flato said. "She's definitely able to put the dives together when it's under pressure." Kruger will be the rare freshman competing at state. She automatically qualified in the first 100 free by placing second with a time of 51.31 seconds during the Region 1-6A meet February 7th. Kruger enters the meet as the 7th seed, only 0.66 seconds off the mark for the third place spot that would put her on the podium with a bronze medal. Kruger finished 4th, 57.63, in the 100 back at the Region 1-6A meet, but earned a call-up in the event from the UIL after the time stood as one of the top 8 non-automatic qualifying times at the state's 8 regional meets. It won't be the first time that Kruger swims at the iconic University of Texas aquatics facility after she swam there this past summer for a sectional meet with COM Aquatics. "I think it will be nerve-wracking just because I want to do so well," Kruger said of the state meet. "I will feel better about it because I have swam at that pool before." The highly competitive Kruger was late to the sport compared to most, taking up swimming at age 10. "When I was like 10, I just had the feeling that I wanted to try out," Kruger said. "My first season, I did not like it at all, but I stuck with it, and now it's my favorite thing ever." "I think the dedication that I have and the commitment," Kruger added, why she was excited in a short time. I make sure I come to practice every day, wanting to do my best at practice and just pushing myself. Shelton contemplating leaving swimming over the summer to join the Bulldogs football team as a wide receiver. Shelton stuck with swimming and will be awarded for it by reaching the state meet at a call-up on the 100 free. Shelton's time at 46.74 seconds in the 100 free at the Region 1-6A meet broke the school record previously by the Bryden Vines, a former UIL state champion in the 100 breast and current University of Texas swimmer. Brandon Vines, he was more of an IMer, but still breaking a record like that, just knowing he's a swimmer for UT, is a big deal for me, Shelton said. Shelton said he came back to the pool because he felt like he was supposed to be a swimmer. He first took up the sport at age 11 in a summer league in the Houston area. My parents kind of forced me into it, Shelton said. I didn't want to start swimming, but I am sure glad I did. Obituaries for February 17th. Ashley Nicole Dill. Ashley Nicole Dill. It is with great sorrow we announce the passing of Ashley Nicole Dill of Midland, Texas. She went to be with the Lord at age 36 on January 30th. Ashley passed away surrounded by her loved ones after her battle with cancer. Ashley is survived by her children, Bailey, Brooklyn, and Jackson, husband Justin Dill, mother Lori Powell, her sisters Kaylee and Destiny, many aunts, uncles, nieces, and nephews, as well as her long list of friends she called family, her village. She is preceded in death by her mother Tracy and Uncle Danny. We would like to give a special thank you to Hospice of Midland and her hospice nurses Kendra and Kayla. Ashley's memorial will be held for close friends and family on Saturday, February 18th at 10 a.m. at the Living Way Church of Midland. Any floral offerings need to be delivered to the church. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Cash App at $BrooklynNDill. That's $BROOKLYNNDILL to help her children during this difficult time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Barbara Burns Robinson. Barbara Burns Robinson, 70, of Midland, Texas, went to be with the Lord February 13th. She was born on June 7th, 1952, to Albert Willis and Ella Majors in Waco, Texas. She leaves to cherish her memory, her husband Ernest, her three sisters Evelyn Dixon, Alice Alexander Artis, and Amanda King Sam, a brother Michael Taylor Starr, as well as a host of extended family and friends. She is preceded in death by her parents, Albert Willis and Ella Major Willis, as well as her brother Maurice Willis. A receiving of friends will be held on Friday, February 17th, from 6 p.m. till 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel, 1502 North La Mesa Road, Midland, Texas, 79701. Funeral services will be Saturday, February 18th at Ebenezer Missionary Baptist Church, 2400 North Tyler Street, Midland, Texas. Starting at 11 a.m., interment will be on Monday, February 20th at 1 o'clock p.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens, 6800 Texas 349, Midland, Texas. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to the Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Deborah Ann Starling Willard. Deborah Ann Starling Willard, 52, exchanged her mortal body in transition to her eternal presence with the Lord on Wednesday, February 8th. Deborah was born to the late David and Lydia Starling on September 14, 1907, in Midland, Texas. Deborah was loved by many and will truly be missed. Deborah was preceded in death by her parents, brother David Wayne Starling, and nephew Tizo Adkins. She is survived by her husband of 27 years, Robert Willard, 4 children, 3 sisters, and a list of relatives and friends. Services will be Saturday, February 18th at 9:30 a.m. at the PAC Center located at 1305 East Illinois Avenue, Midland, Texas. Matthew Taylor Hermanson. Matthew Taylor Hermanson, 29 of Midland, passed away Friday, February 10th. He was a blonde bundle of joy, born to very proud parents, Mark and Pam Hermanson, on March 16th, 1993. He is survived by his parents, Mark and Pam, sisters Stephanie and Amber, brother-in-law David Johnson, and his favorite niece, Ryan Olivia. He will always carry the memory of Matthew. We will always carry the memory of Matthew in our hearts and look forward to the day we are reunited. A private family celebration of life will be held in memory of Matthew. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Ronald Wayne Nickel. Ronald Wayne Nickel, 68 of Odessa, passed away on Wednesday, February 15th. Funeral services will be held at 5 p.m. Tuesday, February 21st at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Chapel. A reception will follow at the branch at NPW. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, February 17th, 2023. What's Right for Texas? Panel debates pros, cons of school choice. An evenly divided panel voiced views for and against school choice during School Choice, What's Right for Texas, organized by the Texas Tribune. The discussion occurred at the Tribune's Studio 919 in Austin and featured Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray, Laura Colangelo, Executive Director, Texas Private Schools Association, Michelle Smith, Executive Director, Raise Your Hand Texas, and Randon Steinhauser, National School Choice Director, Young Americans for Liberty. Brian Lopez, Public Education Reporter for the Texas Tribune, was the moderator. Lopez said the education savings account would be state-funded accounts that parents will have access to pay for things like private school tuition, homeschooling, and in some cases, high school and college education. Steinhauser said she thinks choice schools is the right move for Texas. Colangelo agreed, but Murray and Smith begged to differ. Sticking points were public education's constant need for funding, high salaries of superintendents, bloated bureaucracy, how accountability would work both on student outcomes and financially, and lack of access by economically disadvantaged students to school choice. The average cost of private school tuition in Texas is more than $10,000 a year, according to PrivateSchoolReview.com. Quote, I would say we've seen such a transition over the last 10 years. We've seen private school choice programs be enacted across the country, and while we've sort of been beating this drumbeat for years advocating for private school choice, it wasn't really until COVID that we saw parents coming out in huge droves, end quote, Steinhauser said. Quote, COVID really revealed a lot of deep cracks in our system. Parents were all of a sudden in a front row seat of what their children were learning, and they were oftentimes surprised at either what they were learning or perhaps what they weren't, end quote. Parents also vexed about school closures, mask mandates, and what they saw as, quote, questionable curriculum, end quote. Steinhauser said parents also saw school violence and bullying increase and students' mental health declining. Quote, I would say that now we see a rise in the effort for universal education savings accounts because parents recognize that students should have access to a multitude of educational options, including private schools, including homeschooling, virtual schools, and so I think that now is the best time that we could possibly empower parents with education savings accounts. I'm very proud of and excited to see Governor Abbott come out very strong on this, end quote, Steinhauser said. Smith and everyone saw challenges during COVID, and all students deserve a quality education. Quote, that is the responsibility of the state, to make sure that 5.4 million kids are going to get the education that they need. I don't think that just handing them out to other vendors or to other environments, end quote, is the best use of taxpayer dollars, Smith added. Colangelo said her organization is not setting itself in opposition to public schools, and they appreciate the Herculean effort it takes to educate the 5.4 million children in the state. Quote, we consider ourselves a partner in that effort. We do think it's time for some kids to have more options, and we're ready to make that happen, end quote, Colangelo said. As a local school system, Murray said he is very proud of the choices and options public schools provide. ECISD has 14 choice campuses, formerly known as magnet schools, in the district. Quote, public schools were created really on behalf of the opportunity we have to serve our own community. I have 7 elected trustees that are parents themselves. They're involved in the decision-making. In fact, they hold us accountable for making sure that we are meeting the needs of our own students, and school districts across the state of Texas are filled with choices and opportunities that are a reflection of their own community. That is our responsibility to listen to them and understand and take care of the needs of the children that we serve, end quote, Murray said. Quote, certainly, the pandemic has demonstrated to us that there are more opportunities that we have in public schools today to more effectively meet the needs of students, end quote, he added. As they advocate for education in Texas, the pandemic indicated that more funding, more opportunities to think differently about the type of supports that they provide. Choices and options are something Murray said they believe in. Quote, as a public school entity, we're very proud of the choices and options that we provide and are excited to continue to expand on the choices and options based upon the requests of parents and the needs of our students, end quote, he added. Asked if he was for or against education savings accounts, Murray said he is in favor of choices and options for parents. Quote, I'm in favor of public schools being supportive of the needs of our parents, and again, I think we are responsive today. We listen and act and adjust to the needs of moms and dads, so I'm definitely a fan of investments in public education to make sure that we are effectively meeting the needs of students, end quote, Murray added. Steinhauser said when the discussion about choice started to heat up in Texas about 10 years ago, they were demonized. Quote, right now, we are now seeing, as a result of the efforts to advance school choice in Texas, our friends in the public school system talking about choice more than they ever have, end quote, Steinhauser said. Quote, I think that's an example of how when you push and you push for parents to have freedom and educational choice, it causes everyone to respond. Oftentimes we hear about it, if we have school choice programs, it's going to hurt our public schools. I think the opposite is true. I think that when parents are given an option, it causes all schools to respond and it causes outcomes to increase. We've seen this across the country where we have those school choice programs that it causes outcomes for all students to improve, end quote. Colangelo said private schools have 2 levels of accountability, parents and accreditation. Parents can take their children out of private school anytime, and the accreditation process for private schools is very robust. Quote, what it certifies is that private schools meet or exceed the standards that are in public schools. The way this works is that it's a pretty labor-intensive system. But a group of peer leaders, school leaders from other schools, come to the private school campus for usually around 3 days. They look at everything. They analyze every aspect of the school. Governance, finance, curriculum, teacher credentials, standardized test scores. They sit in classrooms. They talk to the school board. They talk to parents. They talk to the community, end quote, Colangelo said. They make sure the school is meeting the standards of their accreditor, which then assures that it's at least the minimum standard of what children are getting in public schools, she said. They look at the whole program of the school and make sure it is meeting the needs of those students. Quote, if it's not, then they won't be accredited. And if they're not accredited, they won't participate in this program, end quote, Colangelo said. Smith said public school accountability is based on 1 test and 1 day, which doesn't take into account all the amazing things happening in public schools. Quote, instead, we have this narrative that our schools are failing and that we need to send kids to a voucher school. But the only thing they're measuring our public schools on is the test, end quote, Smith said. She mentioned that voucher programs in other states have not worked out well. Murray said public schools are ultimately accountable to the children, followed by parents and taxpayers. Quote, those 3 entities are really the drivers of what we do in public education today. We are fully accredited. Part of our opportunity is to be an accredited institution. Those are public-facing, very transparent opportunities for us to be held accountable. We have public board meetings. We have trustees that are publicly elected to represent the needs of our students, our parents, and our taxpayers. Each school very transparently displays publicly the results of our state accountability system, the results of our state accreditation process, but ultimately we are accountable to the children that we serve, to the families, the parents that we serve, as well as the taxpayers within our own community, end quote, Murray said. Pfluger hosts Midland hearing. Though the field hearing was pushed back more than 2 hours than originally scheduled, more than 100 people crowded the Bush Convention Center to listen to testimony during a congressional field hearing. Thursday's field hearing was for the House Energy and Commerce Committee that featured bipartisan support from more than a dozen House of Representative members from across the country. This marked the second time in a week that Congressman August Pfluger, Republican, Texas, hosted a congressional field hearing in his 11th district of Texas. This hearing was, quote, American energy expansion, improving local economies and communities' way of life, end quote. Quote, the discussion today was about energy expansion, end quote, Pfluger said during a press conference after the congressional hearing. Quote, it's really important that we look at how we produce energy and ways that we provide that, not just our own country's needs, but using it as a tool for national security, using it to help our allies and our partners abroad, end quote. The House of Representative members that took part in Thursday's field hearing included Chair Kathy McMorris Rogers, Republican Washington, Michael Burgess, Republican Texas, Tim Walberg, Republican Michigan, Buddy Carter, Republican Georgia, Jeff Duncan, Republican South Carolina, John Curtis, Republican Utah, Dan Crenshaw, Republican Texas, Randy Weber, Republican Texas, Rick Allen, Republican Georgia, Marionette Miller Meeks, Republican Iowa, Kat Kamick, Republican Florida, Tony Cardenas, Democrat California, and Scott Peters, Democrat California. Those representatives heard testimony from Midland Mayor Lori Blom, local business owner and chairman of the Midland Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Adrian Carrasco, UTPB professor and chair of Department of Geosciences, Michael Zaveda, and CEO of Elevation Resources and IPAA chairman, Steve Pruitt. Blom said she is a second-generation Midlander and that she is currently raising 3 children as third-generation Midlanders. She explained oil and gas employs 500,000 people throughout the state with an average salary of $115,000 and has helped Midland be tied for the lowest unemployment rate in the state at 2.4%. Quote, an 18-year-old with a commercial driver's license can earn 6 figures a year in Midland, end quote, Blong said. Quote, not just can, but they do, end quote. Carrasco talked about how oil and gas jobs help fuel minority business owners. He also explained oil and gas is an economic driver for the Permian Basin. Quote, the oil and gas industry is very responsible and I get to see it firsthand, end quote, Carrasco said. Quote, oil and gas operators and service companies have positive impact on employment, building strong communities and quality of life, end quote. Zaveda was a late addition to the congressional field hearing. He explained the likelihood of fossil fuels being phased out in 10 years isn't realistic. He said he believes a diverse energy portfolio is the safest and most stable way of maintaining long-term energy independence. Quote, I believe the rational and cooperative investment and the development of all forms of alternative energy will not only diversify our energy portfolio, but continue the long-term tradition of West Texas as a major source of America's energy needs, end quote, Zaveda said during the hearing. Pruitt spoke about the technological advancements in the oil and gas industry that has helped produce 5.6 million barrels per day. He said that number was 700,000 barrels per day back in 2008. He also explained 3 factors that affect and limit the growth of natural gas in production. The impact of regulatory uncertainty, permitting delays, and labor and supply chain shortages. Quote, the oil industry is aging, end quote, Pruitt said during the hearing. Quote, my generation is approaching retirement and setting our industry up for the great crew change. However, there aren't enough young people to replace my generation in the oil industry, end quote. Peter said he wants to work alongside oil and gas and help with methane capture. He spoke with members of the media after the meeting, and he said this is his second trip to Midland. He has also visited Houston and Texas Tech in Lubbock to learn more about the oil and gas industry. The congressman from San Diego said oil and gas is going to continue to be an important part of our energy portfolio moving forward. He also said he's working to make sure the oil and gas industry is as clean as it can possibly be. Quote, this country has never solved any big problem, whether it's sending someone to the moon or winning a world war or beating back a global pandemic, unless we work together as two parties, end quote, Peter said. Quote, we can't do it with just one party, end quote. UTPB seeing higher spring enrollment. The University of Texas Permian Basin is continuing its upward enrollment trend this spring. Quote, last semester we saw a trend upwards in our enrollment. This semester that trend continues. We're up nearly 7% in student headcount and about 10% in semester credit hours over the same time last year, end quote, said Becky Spurlock, Vice President for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management. Applications are also up for the fall, she said. Spurlock said the Falcon Free program, which covers tuition and mandatory fees for families that make $100,000 a year or less, and more people recognizing the quality education at UTPB are factors in the increase. Quote, we know financial barriers are the biggest barriers to students attending and completing college. I think more and more people in the Permian Basin are recognizing that UTPB is a place with quality academic programs and fantastic facilities. It's a community that will care about you. It's a place where you can finish your degree, end quote, Spurlock said. She added that there are a lot of things that make UTPB special. Quote, we have the quality of the University of Texas supporting our educational programs. They are excellent, and we're at a size where you're going to be in smaller classes. You're going to know your professors. You're going to know and be known on our campus. I think people would tell you that they feel welcome here. They feel connected. Our community cares for each other. All of those things make a big difference. Plus, we have outstanding academic programs with flexible opportunities. People can go to school in person. They can go to school online. They can do a hybrid program. We make college work for them, end quote, Spurlock said. She noted that while college enrollment nationwide has been trending downward, Texas has stabilized and UTPB's enrollment is going up. Quote, we have trended up the last year in numbers that are pretty different than what other folks are seeing, end quote, Spurlock said. When looking at the university population, they look at semester headcount, how many students are enrolled in that particular semester. They also look at semester credit hours, how many hours are students taking. Quote, this semester, it's remarkable because our student semester credit hours are up 10%. Why is that important? It's important because it means our students are taking more hours, which means they'll get to their degree faster. And again, we attribute that to the resources provided by Falcon Free. Students can take more hours when they have more financial support, end quote, Spurlock said. She added that UTPB has a strong recruitment strategy that focuses on the Permian Basin. Quote, the majority of our students come from this area, and this is our service region. We have had wonderful and growing partnerships with ECISD, MISD, and the surrounding local school districts. We have really gone deeper into the schools to make connections that are yielding those relationships, end quote, Spurlock said. Quote, UTPB has also taken off and has also taken off on engaging and managing some of our recruitment strategy in-house. We've launched new platforms and new marketing programs that allow us to really be in touch with the people interested in UTPB much more quickly. We've also invested in our admissions program so we can get answers to applicants sooner and make sure that they know what financial opportunities they'll have as soon as they come to UTPB, end quote, she added. Director of Strategic Communications Alexa Dunson said they can also talk to embedded counselors at the local high schools, Odessa and Midland College.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.